Morning and welcome to the Florence Boulevard Church of Christ. Just two more weeks, and we've got a full-time preacher, and I don't know about you, but I'm really excited about Austin bringing his sweet family and his abilities here at Florence Boulevard, and I know you're excited as well, and we look forward to that, and let's make sure that we offer them up in prayers to this difficult transition, not just for them, even though it's a good transition, but for the congregation that they're leaving as well. I almost feel like I need to apologize this morning because I'm just going to be on the level with you. I feel just awful. I feel awful. I feel like I could just fall out at any moment. To that end, I have cut some real big chunks out of this sermon, so it's going to be short. So don't everybody say amen at once, but it's going to be short, okay? since the dawn, and you might want to just keep open to Ephesians chapter 4, by the way. Since the dawn of the nuclear age, the United States military has dropped atomic bombs on only 3 cities. And I know that some of you amateur historians are going right now, you know, I think you're on medication because you got that wrong. And I am on medication, but I don't have it wrong. The United States military has, in fact, dropped 3 nuclear weapons on 3 different cities. And here they are. Ready? Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and Mars Bluff, South Carolina. Now, you've probably never heard of that third bombing because it was an accident, actually, that occurred during the height of the Cold War. It happened on the afternoon of March 11th, 1958, just as a part of a routine training mission, an Air Force B-47, which was the bomber back then. If you want to know what that looks like, take a look at one of my favorite movies, Failsafe, and you'll learn all about that bomber, the old one, not the new one. But a massive B-47, 6-engine bomber, was on its way to England with a full load of atomic weapons. But through a series of mechanical glitches and human errors, one of those fearsome weapons broke loose and dropped through the plane's bomb bay doors and landed on the lawn of the Walter Gregg family. The bomb's nuclear core now had not been installed at that particular time, but its high explosive trigger had in fact been, you know, installed. And when that 3-ton weapon exploded on impact, the Gregg's home and their car and everything basically, you know, on their lot almost was destroyed. The blast left behind a 50-foot crater that can still be seen to this very day in Mars Bluff, South Carolina. Now, amazingly enough, the Greggs were hospitalized with some fairly serious injuries, but fortunately none of them were killed. The only fatalities were 12 chickens, the sole victims of the one atomic bombing to ever occur, hopefully, on American soil. Now, they got a name for it, and you know what it is. It's called friendly fire. You may remember a few years back when Pat Tillman, the strong safety for the Arizona Cardinals, left a lucrative career in the NFL, literally making millions of dollars, Pro Bowl type of an athlete, and he left all that glory to go serve in the United States. It wasn't but a few months later that he was killed by friendly fire. Friendly fire is when you are accidentally shot by your own army. And it is one of the most feared occurrences in all of modern warfare. As our military technologies have become increasingly sophisticated and more lethal, sadly enough, our ability to tell what we're shooting at has actually diminished. In World War II and in Korea and in Vietnam, less than 2% of all casualties in those wars were due to friendly fire. But by the time we get to the Second Gulf War, a whopping 24% of all the casualties were because of friendly fire. The Army has called it one of its number one priorities, you know. But even still, with all the conflict in the Middle East, every once in a while, you pick up a paper or you turn on a news broadcast and hear about some soldier who died because of friendly fire. Let that word sink in for a moment. Friendly fire. Such an awkward, chilling phrase, isn't it? There's nothing friendly about being shot at by your own people. Even though it may not be intentional, the results certainly are just as lethal, aren't they? You know what? Here's the most chilling aspect of it all. You don't have to be in the military to experience friendly fire, do you? Ever been shot at verbally by someone who supposedly is supposed to care about you, supposed to love you, supposed to protect you? What are the point having we all lashed out in anger at a loved one only to realize later with regret the amount of damage that we actually inflicted upon them? And when you hear that word anger, let me warn you, just don't think loud voice. Just don't think raising your voice. Don't just think yelling. That's probably anger's most benign form is yelling. Because anger can go down a whole lot of ugly, ugly paths. The snide comment or remark that's designed intentionally to injure and to hurt. Backbiting and gossip, you know. I've seen adults get mad at other adults, and instead of having, you know, the courage to face up to that adult, you know what they do? They take it out on that adult's children, which I think is reprehensible. And then, of course, there's other forms like withholding intimacy and withholding a relationship and withholding a favor. Friendly fire. Anger. The Bible talks about it a lot, right? Certainly, you know, pointing right here in Ephesians chapter 4, 26 and 27. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you're angry. Do not give the devil a foothold. Now, that's only two verses, and I realize, but you got to know, man, there's a treasure chest there. It's only two verses, but, you know, there are at least four things that we can get from those two verses that every single Christian ought to take into their heart this morning as we begin a new transition here at Forest Boulevard. And the first one that I want to share with you, and I've cut this one down quite a bit, but the first one I want to share to you is we need to realize that, you know what, anger is just an emotion. And an emotion doesn't necessarily have to be sinful. Verse 26 says, in your anger, do not sin. So, you know, at this particular stage, if you have it, it's not necessarily wrong. Because emotions are, you know, so often, they're just kind of, you know, they're built in. You know, they're automatic responses. Nobody ever just calmly and coolly says, you know what, I think I'll just be sad for the next 20 minutes. Or get up and say, oh, what a bright, beautiful, sunny day. You know what, I think I'll just be livid for the rest of the afternoon. Nobody does that. They just have an emotion. That's what you do with an emotion. You just have it. You just feel it. You just experience it. And while there are a lot of different kind of emotions that we can experience, you know, including happiness and shame and anxiety and in guilt and in confusion, anger is just another one of those. It's just an emotion. And emotional responses aren't necessarily good or bad. They just are. They just are. You just have them. No, the problem with emotions, of course, is that they're just so emotional, right? Yeah, emotions are just emotional. You know, they're not usually well thought out. You know, they're not planned. They're not reasoned out. We don't apply logic, you know, or rational attitudes toward them. We just, you know, generally blind gut responses, you know, and they just blah, they just happen. But if we don't take time to reflect, as children of God especially, to question our emotions. I mean, if we just impulsively act out, you know, blindly on our emotions, then what began simply as a feeling can turn quickly into a moral failure. And that's why the Bible says over and over and over again, let it go, let it go. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 8, put away your anger. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 31, put away your anger. James chapter 1 and 19 doesn't use that word. It says slow to wrath, but it might as well just say, put away your anger. So number one, the first thing we need to realize is that if we're going to become a people that's pleasing to God and has a handle on that emotion, we need to realize that that's all anger is. It's just an emotion. But the second thing we need to realize is that if we're not careful, anger can actually become an action. That's again why in verse 26, Paul says, you know what? In your anger, do not sin. Because that's the problem, right? The emotion will, if you're not careful, become an action. And the question is not, you know what, can we go through our life without ever getting mad? Can we go through our life without ever becoming angry? I'm going to answer that for you right now. Every single one of you, I don't care who you are. No. No, you can't. You're going to get upset. You're going to get mad. You're going to get angry. No two ways about it. That's not the question and that's not the issue, because the real question and the real issue is this, is what are you going to do with that emotion of anger? What are you going to do, Christian, when you lose your temper? What are you going to do, child of God, when you become mad? You see, you understand this morning that anger becomes a sin when it finds expression in some sort of destructive behavior. like yelling, like backbiting, like gossiping, like withholding something. Anger becomes a sin when it finds the wrong expression. When we allow our temper to lead us into foolish reactions, heated reactions, saying hurtful words, doing hurtful things, then it becomes a sin. And you know what? At that point, you know what? You'd better get forgiveness for it than from it. And then number three this morning, one of the things we need to realize if we're going to put a handle on our anger is that if we're not careful, that unresolved anger can turn into a habit. And after it turns into a habit, you know what? It can turn into a way of life. Verse 26 says, do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. So anger is an emotion that can't be helped. We get that. And sometimes we, you know, without thinking, we just kind of let it degrade into an action. But sometimes, you know, after that, we reinforce it with a little self-help, don't we? With a little bit of mental prep talk. We flame the fires of our inner rage. We pour gasoline on our incredibly unstable, combustible emotions. And we say things like this. Well, he had no right to say that to me. Who does she think she is? I'm not going to let him get away with that. I wasn't raised that way. I don't lay down for anybody. And then all of a sudden we begin to rationalize our behavior and we attempt to justify our words and our actions, even though we know they're wrong, even though we know they're destructive and harmful and hurtful. And that's why the Bible warns us so very much, so very emphatically right here in Ephesians chapter 4, in no uncertain terms, not to take our anger lightly, especially when it's friendly fire, especially when we're dropping bombs on the people that we care about so very much. Because unreasonable, unrestrained, unrelenting anger is a toxic poison that can kill a relationship. It can kill a group of people. It's a corrosive acid that can dissolve even the strongest bonds of love. It's a selfish indulgence that makes it impossible to have a relationship, you know, with some people. You know, there are some people, you know, you just can't abide. You know, you just got to turn your back on and say, you know what, I just can't have them in my life anymore, because you never know when they're going to explode. I have people like that in my life where I've just said, you know what, I'm sorry, I'm done. I got to protect myself. I got to protect my family. I'm done. And you know what, that is no way to live. But sometimes people may think that about you. You know, back in the 18th century, back in the 1700s, there was a man by the name of Jonathan Edwards. He was widely acknowledged at that particular time as one of the greatest thinkers, you know, of the day. And that's saying something, because there were a lot of great thinkers, you know, near the end of the 18th century, near the end of the 1700s. He was a very smart man. He was a prominent author and teacher. He was the third president of Princeton University. And what many, though, of his contemporaries did not know was that Jonathan Edwards had a daughter who was, as they would say in the language of the time, had an unforgivable, ungovernable temper, which means to say she was a hothead. She could just blow up, you know, at any second, and often did. Now, back then, you know, women, you know, weren't that aggressive, you know, and assertive that way in public, and so she did what a lot of people still do today. She didn't blow up on the streets, you know, on the city streets. She blew up at home. You know, she unleashed her anger on the individuals that she cared for the most. She unleashed her anger on her family. Well, apparently, she was able to subdue that for a while because she got a guy to finally fall in love with her. And so he decided that he wanted to marry her, and is the custom of the day, and even still is the custom, you know, in the year 2019, you know, the boy went to her father and said, you know, I'm requesting the hand of your daughter in marriage. Jonathan Edwards looked at the boy and said, you can't have her. But I love her, the young man said. You can't have her, said Jonathan Edwards. But she loves me. You can't have her. But I love her. You cannot have her. Why, the young man asked. And with tears in his eyes, he looked down at this young man that he didn't know really a whole lot about. And he said, because she is not worthy of you. The young man continued, "She's a Christian, is she not?" "Yes, she's a Christian," Jonathan Edwards said. "But the grace of God can live with some people with whom no one else could ever live. You cannot have her." And I guess what I'm trying to say here with this point is that anger can become a habit, and then it can become a lifestyle, and then if you're not careful, it can become who you are. And you're going to cheat yourself out of a whole lot of things, a whole lot of relationships, and a whole lot of memories. And then finally, this morning, number four, habitual anger can become a spiritual trap. That's why verse 27 says, "Do not give the devil a foothold." So let me ask you a question here this morning. You got a lock on your front door? Sure. Got a lock. Do you use it? We do at my house. We got a security system on the way. Simply Safe. It's taken them 2 weeks to get it here. Still not here yet. We could have been killed in that time, you know? I lost my temper and wrote them an email. Yeah, you lock your door. Because you never know who's lurking out there, do you? You can't afford to allow strangers to wander into the sanctity of your home. Do you know what unrestrained anger does? It leaves the door of your heart wide open for the devil, and Satan doesn't really need an invitation to begin with. He'll walk in whenever he can, but if you're going to leave the door wide open, man, that's just like laying out the red carpet for Satan. And men and women can, even Christian men and women can, under the intoxicating influence of anger, do some of the most awful things, say some of the most awful things to the people that they love the most. In fact, I read a little story about a preacher who used to be a nurse in an operating room. And he tells the true story of a day when both husband and wife were wheeled into the emergency room, you know. And the husband had awakened that morning and he was late for the first day of a new job that he'd just gotten. And he lost his temper because his wife, for whatever reason, had forgot to set the alarm clock, you know, like he asked her to do and like she said she would. In fact, he got so angry, he went into his closet, pulled out a gun, and he shot her. In the arm. Didn't kill her, but shot her in the arm. And the wife, who is understandably upset about being shot in the arm by her husband, retreats to the next room, gets a shotgun, and shoots her husband in the arm. Domestic violence is certainly not uncommon, you know, in emergency room hospitals. But what amazed the nurse, who was there on duty at the time, you know, as he was preparing the paperwork for these two people, here is what he overheard. Now, they're separated by a deputy sheriff. They're handcuffed to their respective stretchers. And the husband begins to feel bad, and he starts to cry. And he says, "I love you, baby. I'm sorry I shot you." To which the wife responded, "I love you too, baby. I'm sorry I shot you too." Now, there's got to be a country music song in there somewhere. But I think there's also a lesson too, and that's that if anger, if you let it, can be a gateway to a whole lot of other sin in your life. If you let it. And that's why it's so important to avoid friendly fire. Because you don't want to hurt anybody, but you certainly don't want to hurt the people that you love the most. And maybe that's why we need to resensitize ourselves to the seriousness of unrestrained anger. Because I know even good people, even God's people, can get into the habit of justifying their emotions, get into the habit of justifying their anger, indulging their temper. Even Christians can talk themselves into thinking that they have the right to be ugly and the right to be spiteful and mean-spirited and just ticked off all the time. And God says, very gently yet very forcibly, he says, "No, don't do that. Don't go shooting at people that you care about." I recently ran across this poem not too long ago. I wish I knew the author, but I don't. But I can relate to the sentiment it expresses, and I'm betting that you can too. And it's written by a penitent mother, and we'll let it conclude our time together this morning. It goes like this. "I ran into a stranger as he passed by. 'Oh, excuse me, please,' was my reply. He said, 'Please excuse me too. I wasn't even watching you.' We were very polite, the stranger and I. We went on our way and we said goodbye. But at home, a different story is told. How we treat our loved ones, both young and old. Later that day, cooking the evening meal, my child stood beside me, very still. When I turned, I nearly knocked him down. "Move out of the way," I said with a frown. He walked away, his little heart broken. I didn't realize how harshly I'd spoken. While I lay awake in bed, God's still small voice came to me and said, "While dealing with a stranger, common courtesy you use, but the children you love, you seem to abuse. Look on the kitchen floor. You'll find some flowers by the door. They're the flowers he brought to you. He picked them himself, pink, yellow, and blue." He stood quietly, not to spoil the surprise, but you never saw the tears in his eyes. By this time, I felt very small, and now my own tears begin to fall. I quietly went and knelt by his bed. "Wake up, little one. Wake up," I said. "Are these the flowers you picked for me?" He smiled. "I found them by the tree. I picked them because they're pretty like you. I knew you'd like them, especially the blue." I said, "My child, I'm sorry for the way I acted today. I shouldn't have yelled at you in that horrible way." He said, "Oh, Mom, that's okay. You know I love you anyway." I said, "My child, I love you too. And I do like the flowers, especially the blue." All of us have bad days. All of us have lapses in judgment. All of us have momentary losses of restraint. But none of us should think that anger is harmless, because it's not. And if you want to stay connected to the people that you care about, then learn how to avoid friendly fire. The lesson is yours. This morning, if you're here and you're not a child of God and would like to become one, we can help you with that. We can tell you exactly what to do, and we'll give you a book, chapter, and verse when we do it. If you got something wrong in your life and it's amiss, you need to get public forgiveness for, this is the venue. This is the time, just in case you run out of time, if you know what I mean. If you're ready to make your wrongs right, if you're ready to become a child of God, if you need help, we've got a group of loving elders who are just dying to help you go to heaven. Please come while together we stand.